The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss, Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the Brothers Wiss.
Hey, everybody. This is Greg Talks number 3. This go around, I am going to be doing it solo. It's Sunday. It's late. I've been working on LinkedIn learning stuff all weekend, and I'm busted, and I just don't feel like coordinating with anybody else. So you get me on this go around. Let's see. I've been kind of reflective, right? It's the beginning of a new year on a couple of different things. And one is being a minister. So I'm actually an ordained minister, Universal Life Church, I think, online. So it takes about 3 minutes to get ordained. And I, the first one I did was one of my employees, a guy named Brent, and a really good guy. Confidence problem, doesn't believe enough in himself, but he's awesome. So I ended up doing his wedding. And to be honest with you, I've gotten to the point in my life where, I don't know, I actually enjoy doing that kind of stuff, getting up in front of people and talking and coming up with something, usually amusing. I try and throw a lot of comedy in there. I like to fancy myself as a funny guy. So I was just thinking how that has kind of changed my outlook on things a lot, that the idea of getting up in front of a big group of people. So I've done it twice now. I've also married a nephew of mine, so I was just in front of a large group of people and talking, and some of the jokes fell flat. They always do. But some were pretty good, and they laughed. And I've got a third one coming up pretty soon, too, and I just thought it was interesting that juxtaposition of my before and after and how I think now. And you know, it's funny, something else that kind of occurred to me is I have an older friend of mine named Jan, and she's 73, and so, you know, I was thinking it's hard for me to let myself kind of get close to her, too close, right? And so I was trying to figure out why, and a lot of it comes down to that I think, man, you know what, she's older, so I don't have as much time with her, and I don't want to get too close because she's somebody who's relatively new in my life, and I was thinking, you know, when you get a puppy, you know that you're buying heartache, right? At some point in your life, that puppy's going to pass on and you're going to be upset about it. And I was thinking, is Jan just another pet that I'm going to feel bad about losing? But, you know, it's the more I examine it, the more I think, you know, you can't try and protect yourself from everything like that, right? Because there's a lot of good that comes out of forming and establishing those relationships, even if they are short-lived, right? So in a lot of different facets in my life, I've tried to, even if I think it's something that's going to cause me pain, if it's for the better good, to go for it, right? And that's probably the extent of my reflection on this. Man, I'm getting deep really fast. Something else I have on my list is these crazy deadlines they've been giving me for these LinkedIn learning courses. I was talking to my producer the other day about how they keep giving me these increasingly tighter deadlines with even more dense material, and I've got 2 courses that are going to be due at the end of this month, so I've got about 2 weeks. I officially finished the 3rd course script, so I'm developing 2 courses right now. The other one's already live, the CCNA, so these are the last 2 in that, and I officially finished the 3rd course script. So the 2nd course, I've already completed the script and the slides, so they're ready to record. I've got the okay from the audio team to go ahead and start doing it. I probably will here in the afternoons start picking up a few recordings every so often. But they were saying, well, you never miss your deadlines. And I was thinking, so this is a personal challenge. You guys have a pool going on me, how far they can stretch me before I break. I assume maybe that's the case. Hopefully I can get some money in on it. But it's funny because somehow or another, no matter how tight the deadlines are, I always seem to make it work, right? I end up spending late nights doing more of this weekend work. I've kind of found this happy medium where I can sort of sit on the couch with my wife and bang away at this thing, you know, while we're watching something together, at least. So that's kind of what this pulls me away from, is my free time that I can sit with my wife. And that's honestly really important to me. Even if we're not talking, even if we're just sitting there, I know there's just something about the proximity that does me good. I'm sure you guys all have your various versions of security blankets. That one is... my wife is certainly that for me. So another quick pivot is, again, back to my AliExpress obsession. whenever I think of something or I need something, I go ahead and, you know, especially if I don't need it fast, I'll go ahead and jump on there and order some. So I got a 6-pack of 24 gauge soft silicone wire. Somebody told me, hey, if you've got it, show it to the camera. Ah, so here it is. It's basically hookup wire. It comes in this little box, and I don't know, it's like 30 foot on each one, 24 gauge. What is that? That's about what Cat 5 is, but I like the silicone wire. So it's stranded wire, and it's got a silicone jacket. That means it's super flexible. So whenever you're building circuits, you're routing stuff around inside an enclosure, anything like that, silicone makes it really easy. Also being really soft, it's not going to break as frequently. So if it has to bend and flex a little bit in certain areas, it will generally last a little bit longer. So I would highly recommend that stuff. Pivoting it once again, the Witcher series is pretty awesome. Like I said, I don't really play many video games anymore. Mostly I watch other people play them, which is bizarre in and of itself. But the Witcher series, I went into a blind and I really enjoyed it. I finished it today. I think I started it yesterday, maybe the day before. I can't really remember. It's one of those binge things. I cranked it on while I was working on scripts and slides. So I just kind of had it going in the background. And then I increasingly got less productive at switches, or rather slides and scripts as the plot picked up. So I was watching The Mandalorian when I was doing that stuff, and that was great because when there was a lot of exposition, I would just ignore it and I would work on that stuff. But The Witcher actually got increasingly more interesting, and I actually got my wife to watch a couple episodes in there, and surprisingly, she enjoyed it too. So I would say definitely take a look at it. One thing I don't understand is I'm sure I'm missing a lot of references from the video games, but every so often he like drinks a little tincture, a little potion out of a bottle. I have no idea what that's about. I assume it's like he's chugging some kind of meth or something that gives him Super Saiyan powers. I'm not sure. So something else I ran into in the LinkedIn Learning stuff is I was doing access lists in Cisco. And so we were going through wildcard masks that had explained those things. And it's interesting because they are basically the 180 opposite of a subnet. I was thinking, what's the point of, you know, actually using wildcard masks instead of just using a subnet mask? And then I, you know, was chugging through and was going through the stuff and building the course. Then I remembered that you can do like discontinuous subnets with wildcard masks. So you can actually have a wildcard mask that can equate to subnets that are chunky that don't actually follow one after another. I know that's an edge case, but I know an engineer that worked for HP Compact for a while, and they said they actually used to use that on some of their infrastructure. So I haven't actually seen anybody else who uses that, but they did. So, and also you can get just a little bit more granular, I guess, on ranges of IP addresses instead of just subnet masks. So that's kind of cool. Something else in here is taking compliments better, right? This goes back to that reflection piece of, you know, new year, kind of looking back on things just a little bit. Not that I generally do that very often, but it actually ran into me because of one of my employees, that guy Brent, who doesn't believe in himself enough. He's horrible at taking a compliment, and I realized that I'm actually not that great either. I tend to deflect. I try and turn it around, or I just am very dismissive. And, you know, I've thought about it, and when somebody tries to give you a compliment, they're trying to do something nice for you. So if you're dismissive about it, it's kind of dismissing their nice gesture. So you can't do that stuff. I learned a long time ago that if somebody wants to, like, pay for your meal, don't argue with them. Let them do that. Let them do a nice thing, you know. In the end, it does you good, and it makes them feel good, so go for it. While we're talking about media, I already mentioned that The Mandalorian was pretty cool, and Baby Yoda is so cute. I 100% understand all the memes. All his little tiny teeth, his little tiny hands. He's adorbs, so you guys should check that out. But I watched the New Year's Day Doctor Who episode, and needless to say, I was a little disappointed. Man, for one, I'm not a crazy fan of two-parters. It annoys me. So, spoiler alert, it's a two-part episode. Nothing gets resolved in the first one. But I don't know, man. It felt a little off, you know? My doctor was, it wasn't Matt Smith. Who's the guy before him? I can't remember. David Tennant. David Tennant was my favorite doctor, absolute favorite. And it very much feels out of the vein of that. And then Matt Smith, I guess, was kind of the second. Capaldi, that most recent guy, man, he was not for me. So this new doctor, and unfortunately I can't remember her name. You have to forgive me on that one, but she, her writing for her just doesn't seem as strong. But I don't know. Maybe it'll turn around. There's a few episodes out I need to catch up on that one. So that's another one to look out for. Season 8 of Letterkenny was pretty good. I'm not sure if you guys have watched that. It's a bunch of redneck Canadians. So it feels near and dear to my heart, the redneck part. But it takes a little while to get into it, trying to figure out what their accent's all about, the nomenclature, patterns of speech. But this new season, the first two episodes were really rough for me. I was thinking, you know what, maybe I'm done with this. And then I was like, you know what, I'll give it a third. And then at the third episode, it picked up and it kind of went for the rest of it. So give it at least to the third episode on the new one. I think you'll be happy about it. Oh man, what else is going on? Just recently, finally had a quiet day. I was catching up right after the holidays and stuff like that. And so of course, best laid plans, my cacti server decided to tank. The database had some problems, so that was a fun one to fight through for a good chunk of the day. So best laid plans, I had all these things I was going to do because it was going to be a quiet day, and then no, it didn't work out. I also have on here that I still love you, Webmen, and even if everybody else doesn't. So I know Thomas, every time you say Webmen, he has to cringe and then copy and paste his diatribe about insecurities. And yes, they had a bad day. Everybody has a bad day. You know, they had that exploit, that vulnerability at one point. They've cleaned it up, right? Yeah, everybody makes mistakes. You got to forgive sometimes. I still think for junior engineers and things like that, it's great. And then also, you know, like a system that you're going to be making changes on very rarely. I think too, you're going to forget syntax for stuff, right? So if you only touch something every 8 months, it's probably unlikely that you're going to remember all the nuances of the configuration file. I know somebody was saying too, they don't like what it does to their configuration files, but I generally, if it's something I'm managing with Webmin, I only do it with Webmin. So I never really go into the file and poke and prod it. So it's usually okay for me. And again, if I hardly ever do it, I'm going to forget it. And Webmin never forgets how to configure the thing. So it makes life a lot easier, especially with junior admins. Again, getting those guys in there and up to speed, it makes it so much simpler. Let's see what else. In the CCNA stuff, doing the kind of the SDN, software-defined networking, automation portion right now. And Cisco was talking about their application-centric infrastructure, ACI, for data center design, and they use a spine and leaf design. And in this, they do, you know, like VXLAN. I think it's on this one. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it is. Or is it on their software-defined access portion where they do VXLAN? Maybe it's both. I can't remember which the one they really highlighted on. But I was noticing in their design, you have spines, right? So you have a couple of, couple of core switches, maybe three. And then you have these leaf switches, right, that actually connect to the server infrastructure. So the servers go into the leaves, and you want one server to go into multiple leaves, you know, just for redundancy. And every leaf connects to every spine. However, no leaves connect to each other, which is not wholly uncommon. But also in this design, they have no spines connecting to each other. So there's no direct cross connect between the spines, which I found interesting. And I'm not 100% sure why they prefer that design over something else. You know, because in virtually every other design you ever see, whether it's routed or switched, the core of the network is highly redundant amongst each other, right? So the idea being, if one spine wants to send traffic to another spine, it's going to have to go up through a core, one spine wants to send traffic that happens to live off another spine. It's going to have to go through a leaf to do that, unless there's a direct connect. Or say your leaf switches have some kind of failure and you need to go from one leaf to the other, and there was redundant connectivity, but somehow that redundancy failed. I guess that's the idea, right? You put enough redundant links in to where a failure won't completely take out that stuff, because then it would have to go leaf, spine, and then back down to a different leaf, which I guess that's not a deal breaker. Yeah. It's just if you were going in between spines, I was just trying to think of scenarios where not having them connected makes a lot of sense. I guess for this individual deployment, the ACI stuff, it's okay. So I've got a lot of stuff in here about media. I guess over the holidays, I've been watching a lot of television and stuff, and this is kind of backing up. And I was thinking about UK competition shows, and it put the way we think and act over here in the States kind of in perspective for me just a little bit. In the UK competition shows, like the Great British Bake Off, the Great British Sewing Bee, a really amusing one that we just watched was RuPaul's Drag Race UK. In that, even the competitions where you would expect people to get catty, like in RuPaul's Drag Race, while it sort of starts that way and they try and have a little bit of it here and there, there's a lot of cooperation. People are supporting each other. People are helping each other. Great British Bake Off, you always see bakers helping each other. Sewing Bee, you see sewers, seamstresses. I'm not sure what the proper terminology is there, but you see them assisting each other. You know, if they've got a piece of knowledge that the other person doesn't, oftentimes you'll see them share it. Whereas you compare that to the American shows and it's dog eat dog. It's every man for himself. There is no cooperation. People are constantly bagging on each other, trashing each other. And I just thought that was, it's kind of sad. Is that indicative of our society? Because I like to think even in competition, I'm helpful to other people. There was like a pickleball tournament I was in, and I was playing against an opponent, and I could see they were having problems with their grip, and I offered to give them some rosin out of my bag to kind of put on their paddle grip to help them out, right? And it's not uncommon in that sport, at least, to see people kind of help each other out, even the person that's trying to, you know, knock you out of the tournament. So just thinking it's odd. It's kind of sad to think that that's what we really enjoy, is to see each, people could cut each other's throat as opposed to help each other out, you know, instead of reaching out a hand to pull somebody out. You know, entertainment-wise, we'd rather see. Well, although you look at the amount of shows with people getting murdered, my wife loves watching people getting killed on a regular basis. So maybe that is kind of a part of our entertainment culture over here nowadays. Cutthroat. I don't know. It's a different kind of way of thinking about things, I guess. Something else that happened to me this week is we run some proxy service, web proxy at a remote site, and we have users loop into that proxy server and then come back out. They ended up having problems with it and asked us if we could replace it. And so then also we were doing it through a tunnel over there, and it was before a Cisco 1841, I think, and then like a 1U Fedora box, something like that. I had forgotten about that stuff even existing. That's mostly maintained by a sister company, but the networking portion we maintain. It was very much a set it and forget it sort of scenario, at least on my part. So it ended up having VPN problems. We ended up swapping it with a MikroTik router, I think a HapLite even, because it just didn't require hardly any throughput. Not a lot of power is required out there. And we ended up throwing up a tunnel to work around the old tunnel problems we had, and everything was great. And they said, you know what, the proxy server is fairly old. Is there any way that you guys can maybe emulate that proxy service on your router? And I said, well, it's a MikroTik. Of course we can do that stuff. So after having said, of course we can do that, I fought with it for about 2 hours and couldn't figure out why it wouldn't work. You know, so it's IP web proxy. You go in there, and I actually changed the port to the port they were using previously, which is the Squid proxy port. And I just, for the life of me, could not get it to work. So I ended up labbing it here on my desk. It worked. I ended up creating a tunnel to that router, and I still couldn't get it to work. It was breaking my brain. I even labbed multiple various scenarios, and I could still get it to work every time in my lab. So I did it from my machine, did packet captures, and just nothing was really screaming at me. And I noticed it was on the newest stable on 4.46.1. And I said, hey, you know what, I'll downgrade it to long term, then change the firmware to match the downgraded version And as soon as I rebooted and it came back up, it worked perfectly. So there is some kind of a bug in MikroTik proxy. If you're going through a tunnel, at least on 4.46.1, where the proxy service just doesn't seem to function properly. I sent an email to support. I'm not sure if they've taken a look at it or not yet. Well, they replied back and said, oh, you need a NAT rule to grab your stuff. And I was like, no. I tried to explain that it works with the existing config on this one, does not work on this one, zero changes. I'm using the proxy on the client, so hopefully they'll take a look and figure it out. Some other stuff that I ran into is we got at least two customer requests for troubleshooting this week. And man, put MikroTiks everywhere in your network. So I have one in Houston off of my my network up there that I use for testing. So I've got four gateway routers. And right now I have a single MikroTik that's five porter, and I've got one port going to each gateway, and then I just use connection rules. So I'll mark connections as they come into interfaces to, you know, kind of segregate them out so I can test off of each backbone. So as a connection comes in from gateway 2 on Ether 2, then it'll make sure that it always returns back out Ether 2, right? So things like that. And then I have different routing tables, you know, different routing marks. So if I want to do a ping and I want it to go out of interface 3, which is gateway 3, I'll just choose that in the ping tool, and then it'll test through that gateway. Or I can test through gateway 4 or 2 or 1, and I can do trace routes through those same ones, all using a single MikroTik. So you don't necessarily have to have a individual physical hardware MikroTik for each one of those things. Sometimes just having a single one with multi-port will do the trick for you. And they make what, like a 4011 has 10 ports, so you have that in a centralized location with all of those gateways. You can do a lot of testing off of that one device. So definitely put those everywhere. It is a great tool for creating graphs that you can send to people, and it just makes life so much easier for you. So definitely do it. Something we were talking about before was creating different stuff out of plastic. So I've got a 3D printer. I've got a Lulzbot Taz. It's great, enormous print bed. The only problem is it never prints very well because I'm so lazy about leveling the print bed. It's a manual process, which means I have to like plug in my laptop. I've got to run this specific software, and then I've got to move the nozzle to various areas on the print bed and then put a piece of paper in there, and then I've got to adjust all these screws. Huge pain in the butt, so I almost never want to do it. And once it gets out of a line, I just basically let it sit there and collect dust. I really just need to get rid of this thing. I need to find somebody to take it off my hands and then just buy like a $350 Prusa or whatever they are that does auto bed leveling, right? And the idea on those is before it actually prints every time, it'll go to strategic points on the bed and touch this little follower it's got next to the nozzle and actually figure out the exact height of the print bed and all its inconsistencies in various places and compensate for it. So anybody out there that wants to take the things off my hand, you let me know. Give me an excuse to buy something else. Oh man, but so in lieu of that, a lot of times I will use Instamorph, and it's these little plastic pellets. I'm sure they have multiple different names. And actually, what my camera is sitting on right now, right there, is a microphone boom arm, and then on the end, I made a little mount out of Instamorph. And so this stuff, you're supposed to like take these pellets and put it in really hot water, and it becomes translucent, clear. I don't actually do that. I put them on kind of like this little piece of foil, and then I hit them with a heat gun. So I just do it right here from my work table. It takes, I don't know, 15 seconds of heating it up, maybe 20, and it'll go translucent. And then it becomes almost like a silly putty consistency. And you can shape it into any shape. It cools down. It becomes opaque white. And you can paint it with Sharpies. I've done that before. So I've made like little toys for my kids and stuff like that. But also, like this, it was a threaded rod that was on there. And I just wrapped it around the threaded rod. And then when it cooled off, now it has the threads on there. So not only that, but you can drill it, you can tap it, you can really do anything with it, especially if you leave like kind of a little, a thinner piece of the plastic. It actually becomes a kind of a living hinge, kind of flexible a little bit if you need it to. So there's a lot you can do with it. You don't need a 3D printer if you're patching something. Oh, I've patched plenty of stuff with this. You just get it extra really hot, and it is the stickiest stuff ever. And you can really plug a hole with this thing. The only problem is you can't use it in an area that's going to get hot, right? Because that's what it's designed for. Is once you shape it and mold it and use it for something, you can actually reheat it and just reshape it all over again. So if you put it in your car in summer in Texas, it's going to get soft. It's going to melt, kind of. It's going to get droopy depending on how hot it is in there. So definitely don't use it for that. But if you're making parts that are going to stay in the air conditioning, you're doing quick modeling, you want to mock stuff up, it's good for mocking things up, and then you can take dimensions off of it and transfer it to a different material, or there's just lots of uses for it. So it's actually relatively inexpensive and it's fun to play with. So I would say grab your little pack of that. Let's see, what else did I run into? I have a product on my network that has vendor support, and we ran into what looked like a little bug with it. They were doing some research, and my note here says, no vendor loves your network as much as you do. And that's the truth, you know, because a part of it had to do with our backbone routers and the configuration associated with that, because this product kind of ties into that. And they were saying, hey, we could try all these various things. We could try switching this over to this and blah, blah, blah. And I was looking at that and thinking, I mean, I can look at that, think about it for 5 seconds and realize that's not even close to solving the problem here. It's not even close to the solution we require for this. So I just started scratching on a piece of paper. I'm a very visual guy. Again, I know I've said that a million times, but I just hand draw a picture and kind of think about the way information is flowing through there. Looked at our configurations and I found what I think is the problem actually on the config on the backbones. I'm like, no, don't do any of that other crazy stuff. Let's put this in place and we'll do a little bit of testing. I think this is gonna solve it. And so it's just, I don't know. You can only entrust your children to a babysitter for so long or for so far, right? They just aren't going to care about it the way you are. So always keep that in mind. You know, as much as it is nice to turn things over to a vendor and think, oh, I can move on to the next fire, or I don't have to worry about this, you never really can as much as you would like. So that's unfortunate. You've always got to stay on top of that stuff. Let's see, what else have I been working on? Part of the new CCNA is covering Ansible, Puppet, and Chef. And again, I've worked with Ansible a little bit, and I find it to be very cool product and actually relatively easy to use. Not that there's a ton of great documentation as far as networking specific centric stuff goes. I think I actually want to put some stuff together. You know, kind of a 0 to 60 guide to get you up there as fast as possible. But in there, we started covering REST APIs. And I had never really directly worked with REST APIs. I had applications before that would kind of tie in and do those things, but I've never sort of done that before myself. And so it was really cool to start digging in there. I ended up with this software product you can load on a Windows machine. I'm sure it works for other operating systems too, called SOAP UI. And it's just kind of a GUI configuration for hitting different REST APIs, throwing commands at them and testing stuff out, see what's going to come back. And you can actually, I think you can buy a commercial product from them that allows you to do some automated testing of your REST API to see, you know, if you've bricked it in the process of making upgrades or various things like that, or if all the functionality you require is still up and working. So that's pretty neat. But yeah, that was pretty cool. So what did I hit? So Cisco has this thing, this DNA center, which is kind of at the heart of their software-defined access layer. So it's the idea of turning over your campus LAN administration, right? Like your inside your buildings, you're connecting your users and your infrastructure and various sites for your data center infrastructure. But this other piece works pretty well for... Yeah, but the DNA center supposedly reaches out to your edge equipment and takes it over. So the idea being that you can have a brownfield network and you don't want it to take care of the southbound configuration necessarily. So it will actually go out and messed up the configuration on your production network, and that's unfortunate. What they're really moving to is kind of a VXLAN sort of configuration, where it creates VXLAN tunnels all over the place, and just zips traffic around there so that each edge switch is actually routed, and you have to have specific hardware requirements, so specific models of switch, right? Because it has to support the infrastructure as well as have the new southbound interface capabilities. Southbound being anything that's going to go from the controller to reach out to configure the end devices, right? So you also have northbound, which is going to be kind of your RESTful API on the DNA center, which is what I was playing with, right? So you have other applications that can reach in and make changes and things like that. There's also a GUI where you can make changes and adjustments, right? And that's, I guess, considered a northbound interface as well. But they said on a greenfield network that's brand new, DNA Center will go out and it'll just completely control all the configuration of those end devices, right? And then core devices all the way through your infrastructure there. But that's what I was using SOAP UI to test, was the REST API on DNA Center. And what's really neat is Cisco has a couple of sandbox versions that are out on the internet and just available for anyone to hit all the time. So all you have to do is point it at there, get a security token, and then use that security token in your queries, and you can go to town and you can, I mean, not, obviously full functionality is not there. They don't want you completely breaking it. You can reserve some DNA Center VMs in there that do give you full control, but it's for a limited amount of time, right? So the idea being those get recycled, completely wiped, and then the new guy, whenever it's his turn for the reservation, gets kind of a default state one, so that you can just break it in any way you choose and it's not going to hurt anybody else. Whereas the public just always on ones are actually really cool to test with. So I was sitting on the couch and I tested REST API with SOAP UI for the first time. It's pretty neat. So I would definitely say if you're interested in that stuff, give it a try. Talking to my buddy Jimmy, he said that a lot of manufacturers actually have sandbox REST APIs out there for their stuff, like Salesforce, right? So that you can get in there and test and build your applications based on that stuff without actually having to break infrastructure, which is really nice. Something else in the automation world that I learned about is, obviously I knew this, that Ansible pushes configurations, right? So you create playbooks in there, and those playbooks are run, and then that pushes configuration changes out to end devices, and southbound interface is going to be netconf or SSH, and I think you probably see SSH most of the time. So it will SSH into your equipment just the same way you would and push configuration changes. But Puppet and Chef are agent based, right? So they really require an agent running on the end device, and it will do a configuration pull instead. So you don't push a config. They actually, I guess, every so often or through some automated process, look and pull configurations and make sure that they are the way they should be. There's this concept of source of truth, which I thought was interesting when I was first learning about it, that the source of truth is some place you have something that says this is what the configuration should look like. Excuse me. In a lot of smaller networks, the source of truth is an end device itself. So in a lot of our networks, we will just log into the individual piece of equipment, configure it, and then we'll have an automated tool like Unimus or Rancid or something like that go out to the device and pull the configuration, right? So it's just a backup. It's not actually the source of truth. The source of truth lives on the device. Whereas with automation tools, the Ansible server itself or a Git repository, something like that, will be the source of truth. So you say, hey, this Cisco switch is supposed to look like this, and it's configuration that's in Git. And it's always supposed to look like that. So what the automation tool, Ansible, will take that source of truth, and it'll say, okay, let me examine this switch, do a query against it, and see, does it look like this? And if it doesn't, what parts don't look like this configuration? So it'll examine it. It'll find those parts that don't match, and it'll push to the device and update those portions so that the device will match the source of truth. So whenever you want to make a configuration change, you don't go to the end device and do all that stuff. You don't even necessarily go into the Ansible interface and make changes. You just push whatever changes you want into the Git repository, and then either the tool will automatically or you will initiate an update from the tool. So you'll go into Ansible and say, hey, I've made an update to the Git repository. Run it against these devices and make sure that they match. I think that's really cool. There is really good vendor support in Ansible for your major manufacturers like the Ciscos, the Junipers, the F5s, things like that. And those guys actually have programmers that maintain those packages. So they're the ones who, as iOS updates, they're updating the modules in Ansible so that all that stuff will work right. There are some other ones like MikroTik, but they don't work in quite the same way. They don't have that module that can look at the source of truth and inventory the item, right? The individual host, and say, hey, this guy is supposed to look like this. Does he match? It doesn't have that. It really only has kind of push capabilities. So it can take a playbook, configuration changes that you want made, excuse me, and then push it out to the device. So until, I guess, maybe MikroTik wants to go out there and write a module to be able to do that, it's still kind of more of like a push kind of functionality. Having said that, it's so far what I've seen, one of the better interfaces for that kind of configuration. I've actually written some playbooks for updating MikroTik stuff, and I really need to make a public Git repository where I put those out there for anybody to grab, especially once I start doing some tutorials on this stuff. I guess that makes a lot more sense. But what I found was interesting too is, like Puppet, since that pull model, there's not a ton of Cisco Kit that has integrated agents for Puppet. While there are some, most of them don't. So what Puppet uses is a proxy agent. So this proxy agent is like a server that sits somewhere, and whenever you update the source of truth, the proxy agent will then pull from that repository and then push over via SSH or netconf those changes. So it's kind of like sort of what Ansible does, but it adds an additional layer to get there. And from what I can tell, Chef doesn't do the proxy agent with push capabilities. So I don't think it's going to be very well suited for networking environments. Interesting. I guess if anybody's using Chef in that way, I'd be curious to hear about it. But yeah, that's what I've been occupying my time with a lot. So again, this was one where I just sort of talk at you and blast ideas and thoughts out there into the ether. So I think people seem to like it better when I actually have a guest. But man, I was busting this weekend, and so I really just didn't want to put anything together. Sorry, guys. Give me feedback. Let me know what you think. If this is still worth doing, if you really think it is so much better with an additional person, I will work harder to get somebody on here. If you think it's kind of okay either way, then that's great for me because I can be additionally lazy. If not, let me know. So thank you guys for listening. Appreciate all of you. If you want to join our patron-only Slack, it's patreon.com/thebrotherswisp. You can jump in there. And we've got a couple of new guys in recently, and I keep hearing from people, hey, I'm not that smart, or maybe I'm new at this, and I don't know that I have much to contribute. You guys definitely have something to contribute, so please stop worrying about that sort of thing. Everybody's got something to contribute, even if you lurk more than you actually participate. Don't worry about it, because there's going to be a couple times where you can jump in there and really add value. So thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for being part of the community. And we'll talk to you soon. Jokes were loud and annoying, but we're informative. Facts were not disappointing. Just give us a listen, because fun is the mission. I'm telling you, you don't know what you are missing. Ideas and some good comedy given. If you missed the show already, don't worry, you're forgiven.